Hello again, guys, and welcome back to the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, as brought to you by the Moot Court Society of Universitas Pajajaran's Faculty of Law. My name is Travis, the Chief Coordinator for all things International Moot Court at our organization, as well as your weekly host on the show. This week, we're starting off with a little bit of news from our production team, because due to a number of unforeseen changes, we will be publishing our episodes according to a new plan, thoroughly designed for your listening pleasure and education. We will continue to give you guys full-length episodes to teach you more about moot courts and how you can be the best mootie you have the potential to be. We will also continue to break down different moot courts and have exciting alumni and former mooties to help us teach you all of this. However, in our newest development of plans, we will only be able to publish these full-length episodes once every 2 weeks. But don't worry though, because here at the Essential Mooting Guide, the podcast, we are committed to educating you the best that we can. So in every week in between, starting from this week, we will be publishing mini-episodes to teach you guys about real substantial topics, which we study and use within international moot courts in both fields of public and private international law. During these mini-episodes, I won't be the only one teaching, though. In fact, today, we have a special guest to help us learn our first lesson, Ms. Naila Amatullah, a dear colleague of mine, as well as a good friend, and in fact, she's the new director of the show. She's an accomplished mootie, and to prove this, last year she was the recipient of the Best Respondent Oralist Award at the Asia Cup Moot in Japan. She'll be expanding on what we've already learned about public international law last week, and teach us about the sources of international law today. So without further ado, let's go straight to Naila and hear all about it.
Hello guys, my name is Naila Amatullah, and today I will be teaching you about the sources of public international law. First and foremost, if we're talking about public international law, then the main subject in this field of law are states. Therefore, any international legal action and disputes will always revert back to the conduct of states. Any international action or disputes conducted by states is based on the rules, written or unwritten, agreed between states. Such rules can be referred to as sources of international law. The types of sources of international law can be found in various sources, which according to the statute of the International Court of Justice, there are three main sources and two subsidiary sources of international law. Written under Article 38, Paragraph 1 of the Court Statute, the five sources of international law include international convention, customary international law, general principles of law, as well as judicial decisions and teachings of highly qualified publicists as its subsidiaries. Generally, we would know that there is no real hierarchy among those sources of international law. But as mentioned before, the first three sources have a binding effect towards state, and that states are obliged to comply with it. On the other hand, the last two sources are subsidiary, in the sense that it does not have a binding effect, but may help the International Court of Justice to interpret certain laws in a certain case. Now, we will be discussing the sources one by one. Firstly, there is an international convention in which it is a written document where the provisions of the materials that are regulated in the documents are codified systematically. For example, the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties or Officiality is a written document that regulates the standard requirements agreed in the context of treaty making, which is codified systematically. One important thing about the first source of international law is that it is only by consent of a state that the provisions under the convention would have a legal effect on the state. In another sense, no coercion can be carried out on a state to comply with the rules in a convention if the state does not give its consent to be bound by the convention. The next question is, how do we know that a state has given its consent to a convention? Here, we can refer to Article 11 of the FCLT, which states that the consent of a state to be bound by a treaty may be expressed by signature, exchange of instruments constituting a treaty, ratification, acceptance, approval or accession, or by any other means if so agreed. Secondly, customary international law. Compared to international convention, customary international law is quite different. Customary international law is one type of sources of international law that is unwritten. Therefore, the consent of the state is not necessary to take state's compliance. A customary international law is a practice accepted as law. Customary international law is present as it is understandable that there is not a treaty for every absence of international law. The International Court of Justice in the 1969 North Sea Continental Shelf cases has stated that to establish a rule of customary international law, it must fulfill the two requirements, that is, of state practices and opinio iuris. State practice is an objective element as it refers to the actual tangible action by states, which form the custom. This practice can be in many forms, such as diplomatic notes, declaration, states' official statements in their representative capacity, or even through how states form their national legislations. Although in some cases, a rule cannot be really expected to be widespread, due to the different circumstances in each state. Therefore, the court also stated in the North Continental Shelf cases that state practices can be derived from only the practices of those states that are really affected by the situation. The second element, which is opinio iuris, is the subjective element, which describes as the conviction felt by states that a certain form of conduct is required by international law. In other words, when establishing customary international law, it is not enough to show the countries are performing their general practice, but you also need to prove that when they are doing those actions, they are doing it with the belief that they are carrying out an international obligation. An example of this, very simply, is diplomatic immunity. Even before we had the 1961 Vienna Convention of Diplomatic Relations, heads of states have been immune from national laws of countries they are visiting for, as long as we can remember. When states are performing this, even in the absence of a treaty, they are doing so with the belief that such rule is important in the international relation. General principles of law are the various similar legal norms followed by national legal systems, especially the major one. These have their own sets of elements, as you can read. The thing about these is that generally they have a wider and less concrete scope of application. General principles of law are used primarily as gap fillers when treaties or customary international laws do not provide a rule of decisions. The most well-known principles in international law are pacta sunt servanda, good faith, and sovereign equality. One last important thing to know about the first three sources is that it is very common that one rule can be considered as both the three types of sources. For example, the principle of pacta sunt servanda can also be seen as a conventional obligation, as it is codified under Article 26 of the FCLT. Furthermore, the customary international law of non-use of force can also be found in Article 2, Paragraph 4 of the United Nations Charter. Now, as we have cleared the three primary sources of international law, let's move on to the subsidiary sources of international law. They are judicial decisions and teachings of highly qualified publicists. This particular source of international law refers to past cases on the issue they are adjudicating to the extent that it might reflect to each other. This would consist of any judicial decision from any court, including other tribunals and national courts. As mentioned before, this source is only used to help the court to find a correct application of certain rules in a certain case and not directly binding to a state. This is also made clear in Article 59 of the Court Statute, which stipulates that the decisions of the court has no binding force except between the parties and in respect of that particular case. Lastly, the teachings of highly qualified publicists are simply scholarly writings of experts, such as doctrines and international law experts' opinion. The actual weight given to any decision or scholarly work will depend on the quality of the reasoning and level of prestige. One example of a case in which the court has used teaching of highly qualified publicists is the 1999 Sedudu Island between Botswana and Namibia, where the court used the work of the International Law Commission as a body of experts who develop and codify international law, in which it consists of 34 individuals with recognized competence and qualifications in international law. As we have covered all sources of international law, a little bit of extras we would like to talk about is how to actually implement the sources of international law to an argument. Every moot court competition will require all the participants to construct a legal memorandum. Inside the memorandum is all the arguments that we construct based on questions concerning the topic of the dispute. Therefore, each of the arguments that we construct should consist of a legal basis as to prove which provisions of an international law that is breached or questioned. A legal basis shall be presented not only to prove a rule that is breached or questioned, but also for the court to refer to, allowing them to adjudicate the dispute according to the proper sources of international law. Now we have arrived at the end of this episode. Hopefully, those information can be well understood and useful for all of you. Look forward to our next episode for topics that are no less interesting. And see you soon!
Well, there you have it, guys. Hopefully now you, dear listeners, understand the five sources of public international law. Treaties, customary international law, general principles, judicial decisions, and the teachings of highly qualified publicists. Stay tuned next week for our third full-length episode, where we'll be talking about COVID-19 and quarantine, as well as its effect on the moot court community. Most importantly, we will also be talking about how the Moot Court Society at Universitas Pajajaran is handling the situation. So once again, to all of you interested students who are hesitant about joining moot court because of these unsure and trying times, be sure to look for our episode next week. See you guys soon, and may it please the court.